And I also have two unmarked vehicles that we're now getting into the fifth year because there are two of them that were put off last year. So that's where we stand as far as the 11 vehicles.
And the reserve.
And when you say these are unmarked, these are still unmarked, but they are doing duties very similar to patrol in terms of the amount of wear and tear?
Well, correct. Especially our civil deputies, they will still respond emergent because they'll supplement patrol when we have an emergent call. And so we need to keep them up to as good of a standard. And they're putting on the high miles by serving civil papers across the county.
Okay, so here's where I am, just for me. I am an absolute unequivocal yes to the five patrol cars. I can easily get there on replacing two of the unmarked vehicles with the idea that those two unmarked vehicles would roll down and replace the Charger and the Impala that are pool cars right now, and the Impala and the pool car go. So the five patrol vehicles go away and replace with five new ones. The two that most desperately need to be replaced of the unmarked variety get replaced, but those vehicles, assuming they're in decent shape, replace the 2008 Charger and the 2009 Impala and go, and I'm struggling to get beyond that. That's where I am as we sit here right now.
What's there beyond that? I mean, if you talk about the...
Well, that's seven vehicles instead of 11. So that's what's beyond that.
Also, I guess, to add to that is next year, what we have in the rotation is another seven vehicles, five of which are marked.
Right. You're staying right on our average, right? 2 years of five, right. two years of four.
The other one, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but the sheriff's vehicle, I think the board was interested in having that one when it came up for rotation, that we could get traded out. Maybe I'm mistaken on that.
Whatever they do with that.
Yeah. But we've taken the last one you had. I don't know that
every one of them I think that I've had you've taken. Whether it was just off the cuff or not, I was told that the planning and zoning has already asked for it.
My thought was maybe the health department, but
yeah.
What do you guys do with those deals?
I don't care.
The thing is, we're looking at what we have here to meet our needs.
Sure.
And the vehicles that we have, we utilize the best we can. When we have a vehicle that's causing us problems, it's usually the first on the chopping block that goes.
Right.
But when we have two vehicles that are still in somewhat decent shape, we like to push the older ones out, like the pool cars or the old reserve cars or whatever we do, and push those out so we can replace with not a brand new vehicle, but a more usable vehicle than what we've had.
It makes sense.
That's what we're doing here.
It makes sense, and that's what I'm suggesting here. I in terms of pushing out those pool cars, replacing them with two newer cars.
How many patrol vehicles? Are there?
Marked patrol vehicles. We have five.
What is that? Civil, two unmarked or semi-marked patrol vehicles that we're going to?
We have one civil, and we have one, two, three with investigations. And one jail transport and one administration.
Well, jail transport, that's the
and that's one we can keep.
The jail
actually,
transport.
Yes.
Let us look at these vehicles again. This will be part of what we come back and talk with, and then we'll
be great.
See.
Yeah, and I just want you. I want you to know. You don't even have to. I don't believe, unless you guys want to talk about it, you don't even have to talk to us about the five patrol vehicles. So in my mind, it's 5-5-4-4. That rotation on the marked patrol vehicles, we don't even need to talk about it unless you get one that starts giving you real trouble ahead of that rotation. Then we need to talk about it. Those cars, we got to take care of them. Outside of that, I think you've made a great case for getting two of the unmarked and moving it down. If you want to go beyond that, we really need to talk about why.
Paul, when you replace a vehicle or look to replace a vehicle, are there options where, say, like we're getting ready to move now into 2015, but there is either a 14 or a 13 that has not been used, almost little or no mileage? Do you look at any of those types of options, are when you look at a replacement vehicle?
We look at all options.
Okay.
We look at maintenance records. We look at mileage. We look at the general condition of the vehicle.
So my question would be is when you use the term new, we're not necessarily saying that we're going to take the latest model that just come in for that calendar year, is what my question was. Say, for example, if I was going to go out today to buy a new vehicle, I may find a vehicle that is sitting on the lot that is a year older that has not been used, or I may find one that's only got a new car with, still warranty. Yeah, it's still under warranty.
We look at that, and we have done that in our unmarked cars.
Right.
The situation that we come into in the marked cars, those are usually state bids. And what we have from time to time, when we get ready to do this,
that's true.
We will be notified, say, by Carl Chevrolet. Yeah. They had, like 2 years ago, they had a bunch of Tahoes that they brought in a police package that didn't go out, so they gave an excellent rate on them, you know, below police markup. So that's where we got a couple, three of ours at.
Right.
So,
gotcha.
I mean, yes, we look at that, and we shop around a little bit to see what we get. But we always do our bids, and we bring those bids before the Board of Supervisors, right. And the Board of Supervisors sees what we're doing, how we're doing it, and approves it accordingly.
All right. Good.
I've been really pleased with the process. And I know I'm just walking into the end of that comment. I've been really pleased with how we go about purchasing the cars. I just want to talk about how we're doing the rotation. I continue to see patrol cars differently than I do the rest of the cars.
Well, we'll come back with
perfect.
With a discussion for that then. We'll come back in February.
Okay. Perfect. Anything else on those vehicles? So now we got a monster vehicle. We got and I mean that with no disrespect to the vehicle. We got a monster vehicle we got to talk about. We ready to do that, or do we need to take a 2-minute break? Sheriff, do you need any time? Anybody need any time before we go to that conversation?
Wayne, how are you doing?
I was going to need one, but go ahead.
No, you want to go? Take a break. We'll take 2 minutes, and then we'll get started.
Very good.
What? I'm not going to do it.
I'm watching.
We got everybody. You ready? All right.
Yeah.
Back at it. So the MRAP. And Sheriff, I want to just set the stage, and you can help me with setting the stage on this. As I recall, this would have been fall of 2013. You and Barry Thomas stepped in. I was serving as chair for 2013. You and Barry Thomas stepped into my office. Is fall of 2013 about right? And I'm looking for real general. Does it sound about? I mean, I know I was chair, so that's how I get 2013.
We've had the paperwork in for an armored vehicle with the military for several years.
Right.
And it just got flagged that we were selected to get one at that particular time. And when we were notified of that, that's when we, I think we came in individually and talked to you about it. I don't think we were there together, were we?
You and Barry were here for something else, and you said, hey, you got a minute. This is my recollection. Yeah. You said, hey, you got a minute, and we went back and we visited about it.
Yeah, and there was another time I talked with you about it.
Absolutely.
Just kind of keep, you know, like I always try when I do something that's out of the ordinary.
Absolutely.
My history has always been to talk to the board.
Did a great job keeping the board chair informed. And what I recall saying to you then, and what I think I'm consistent in saying, I don't think it's the only time I said it to you, I'm sure I'll say it many, many more times, I truly and completely view this as I'm a Board of Supervisor member, you're the sheriff. I have my statutory role, you have yours. I've got no idea what an MRAP is, what it does, you're the sheriff. If you're telling me we're getting this thing and it's not going to cost anything and you deem as sheriff it's appropriate for you and your duties of law enforcement, I got no problem at all with that. You won't hear any objection from me, but I will never vote for $1 to support something like that without completely understanding it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the conversation that I recall that had. I mean, is that close to the conversation you recall us having?
Well, yeah, that I'm the sheriff, and if I deem a vehicle is necessary.
And I gave you my personal view of where I was. So.
As far as putting money towards this,
yep.
I guess that, as I remember, as the sheriff, you have your budget and you spend your dollars.
Right, but I would never vote to put dollars specifically toward this. You're the sheriff. Hopefully you've never heard from me that I try to come down on the way you spend dollars as a sheriff.
Yeah, if I came in and asked in a meeting or a budget work session to spend money on stuff like this, then Yeah, I never have done that.
Right.
I just use stuff within my budget or within the law enforcement forfeiture fund to pay for.
Absolutely. So really good. So then we just kind of went on. Paul, you became chair for 2014. The MRAP gets here. I think I see that it got it really, really looks good, right? It's got the sheriff's logo on and everything. And then the next thing I hear is that it's so heavy, it's sinking into the asphalt, and we need to pour a concrete pad. And it got me thinking. The board has never seen anything. So this, in my mind, at that point, is a county piece of property, and the board has never seen anything on this. And now we're having to spend dollars in order to maintain this thing, and it wasn't really what I visualized. So I started trying to figure out what this is. I guess one of the first questions was, okay, so do we have to insure it? What's going on there? And so I started asking questions, and it's the reason that I asked Stephen to come over today, because I asked him to look into a few things. And I'll just ask a question, Stephen, and if you could help the board through this.
You can come up here if you want and use one of these microphones.
Oh, that'd be perfect, yeah, so that we can get you on tape. I want to understand who owns it. I want to understand what our liability is. I want to understand what happens someday when we dispose of it. What happens if it rolls over somehow? As I understand, it's a $700,000 piece of equipment. Are we responsible for the $700,000? What happens when a day comes that we don't want it anymore? What kind of condition do we have to return it in? I guess the first thing I found out is that we don't own it, which concerned me. But I'm going to stop right there, and I'm going to let you talk for a minute on what you found, and then we need to have the conversation.
Okay. Well, I, like many of you, first was aware of it when I saw it at the parking lot at the Justice Center. And I think after that, I may have had a couple of conversations with Jeff just in passing about it. I examined it. I walked around it. And then, of course, I didn't know anything about the arrangement to it. And in looking at the issue for you today, I did some background checking with the federal government, and we attempted to contact with the state government. And I can tell you that this is part of the 1033 program. And this has a caption. This is from the Tactical Vehicle Lead. It's a law enforcement support office through the Department of Justice, or the Department of Defense, excuse me. And I got my information by speaking to a man by the name of Greg, and spelled D-A-N-G-R-E-M-O-N-D. He is the tactical vehicle lead for the federal government, or for the Department of Defense. He's out of Battle Creek, Michigan. We also attempted to reach a representative here from the state of Iowa, and that person was out of the office. This program is to bring these military vehicles into use by law enforcement agencies across the country. And as I understand this, I didn't understand it, and so when I started to look at this issue, I broke it down into five categories, and I will just focus on your questions as you've sort of presented them to me. But my five categories that I found helpful to think about this vehicle are, first of all, just a perception issue, and then the use of it, and then, again, who owns it, and what liability is associated with it, and then the upkeep of it. It's just a vehicle. And that's how I broke down looking at what this is. Now, your first questions to me are, who owns it? Well, the United States owns it.
Okay.
This is a loan program, and the sheriff signed essentially a contract to obtain this vehicle. He signed an agreement with the Defense Logistics Agency on 8/15 of 13 as chief executive official. And what that did was it set into motion a series of other documents that have been put in place. The federal government has an agreement with the state of Iowa. And the reason for that is that because it's their vehicle and we are going to use it, the federal government wants to be indemnified, meaning they have the state of Iowa indemnify them, and I have a section of that indemnification agreement. And it's rather lengthy, but essentially the state of Iowa...
Just of all liability, basically.
Yeah. Based on the agreement that the sheriff signed, has agreed to protect the federal government from any claims arising out of the vehicle's use or its keeping, its operation.
So if somebody were to sue over the vehicle, they're suing the state?
No.
Oh, wait. Okay.
No. They would sue us.
Us. We're the ones. Now. That's what the indemnity is.
Well, does the state have the authority to tell us what we're responsible for?
Well, I'm not done yet.
Okay, sorry. I don't mean to interrupt.
It's rather complicated. And the other part about this is our liability for this vehicle.
Okay.
I haven't gotten to that part.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, I jumped ahead.
This is just for the federal government to enter into this agreement. They had to obtain from the various states the assurance that they aren't going to be sued or held liable for any damages or any kinds of liability arising out of the use or ownership of this vehicle. That's just for the federal government. Now, that still means it to us as to our liability for its use. This indemnification agreement, as I read it, does not indemnify the county for our use of the vehicle. Now, I know that I think the sheriff must have approached our insurance agent because this vehicle is covered. I do have its limits of coverage that we have purchased. Now, in terms of the liability for this vehicle, you have to break it down into, like any vehicle that you own, you have to break it down into damages arising out of its use, which is liability, which would be personal injury, not only to the people who operate it, but to the people who might be harmed by its operation. For instance, if it gets in a traffic accident. And then you have to talk about, for instance, the comprehensive coverage on the vehicle. That is, do we carry comprehensive coverage on the vehicle to cover for damages to the vehicle itself? Now, we purchased insurance that covers its comprehensive. It's valued at $733,000.
I thought I'd heard that.
Well, I actually, when I first saw it, I walked around it, and it had a sticker on the left front fender, and it actually had a price tag on it. And I remember that very distinctly because you don't encounter $733,000 vehicles every day.
Huh?
And so that was of great interest to me because of how expensive it is. Now, okay, so we've purchased insurance for it. In my conversation with Mr. Dangermond, and I haven't had this in writing yet, but Mr. Dangermond explained to me the arrangements that the federal government has with respect to all of these types of vehicles. And a lot of times they loan out Humvees. Humvees were the most popular, or I think the most common, until these vehicles came upon the scene. And he told me that we don't have to be concerned about comprehensive coverage to this vehicle.
Okay.
Again, I don't have this in writing, but I asked him at several points to please explain this to me. And he said that under their program, if we would wreck this vehicle, if we would destroy it, if it would catch fire or whatever, that we would not be responsible to the federal government for the damages to the vehicle. That's quite extraordinary. And I'm going to get reassurance from him. I'm going to press him again. There was another person who was not in the office who we did not contact, Julie Casada, and I did not get a hold of her. But I want to pin this down before I make any recommendations about removing that component of our policy, because that's a pretty expensive component of our insurance policy. And if we don't have to have it, then that's great. But as far as our liability for this unit, I would recommend that if it's kept, we continue to purchase liability insurance. That is liability and probably medical for anyone who may be injured if it's in an accident, or any member of the sheriff's office who happens to be operating it who is injured. Now, an interesting aspect of this is, of course, and this is a very confusing, I think, to a lot of people, and I think it's confusing to the sheriff in terms of what the sheriff can sign in the way of a contract and whether or not it can be binding. The sheriff and I and all the other elected officials, we can't sign contracts that bind the county unless you approve it. That is, unless you authorize us to be a signatory. I can't sign a contract without your approval. I don't think, as I understand it, is that right, Sheriff? You didn't come to the board for approval on this?
I can't say that right now because the person, like I said, we've been working on this for many years.
Sure.
Don Ellis was the Port Services Commander, and Don Ellis is the person who had the direct contact with the very people that Steve Holmes is talking about.
Sure.
Now,
but the board of supervisors has never taken action on this, anything to do with this MRAP.
On that vehicle.
Right.
But what I'm looking at is one of the things I'm going to need to do is go back and look at our records, our MRAP folder, and also I'll be contacting Don Ellis.
Absolutely.
And finding out, because usually what we do before I sign any contract is I forward it through the county attorney. It usually goes to Jessica Reynolds, and she looks at it. So I want to see if in this case we have done that, and we would have that in our records, or Don would know that, if we forwarded that to either Jessica or Steve's civil person at that time.
Perfect.
Well, if that was done, then all of the other legal aspects of this, that is the indemnification by the state of Iowa and all of these other matters, are okay. But if that was not done, then I have some real concerns that something needs to be done right away with respect to that on your behalf. Because if the sheriff doesn't have authority to sign, then this vehicle is not, in my opinion, necessarily included in all of these indemnification in aspects of indemnification by the state of Iowa. That is to say, it's here, we have possession of it, but you haven't approved it. And that causes concern to me, because then I have a real question about whether or not the federal government is actually indemnified by the state of Iowa. Now, in my conversation with Mr. Dangermond, I asked him about that, and he didn't seem to be bothered by that. And of course, Mr. Dangermond is not an attorney, and I didn't press that with him. But that is important, I think, in our discussion. The other aspects of this vehicle, and I took some time after it first came here to look into it, and I did some looking around. And if you want me to continue.
Yeah, please. And if anybody has thoughts or questions, I mean, let's have a conversation about this.
Well, it had to do with its liability, and I had seen a couple of programs on television about these armored vehicles and their use and how they came into being, and the vehicle itself is highly criticized by its design. It's a very, well, it was designed as being a vehicle to protect soldiers from mines. It's extremely heavy. It weighs 47,000 pounds. And you've alluded to that with this pad. It's top heavy. You can just take one look at it and see that its center of gravity would be extremely high. And all of the articles that I read about it are very critical of it. And as I understand, its use in Iraq and that theater of war was highly criticized once it was made. It was made, I think, in Indiana. And it did not perform as they thought it would, especially when it rolls over. The doors, it has two doors. It's sort of like a coupe with a back door. The two doors, the side doors, are extremely heavy because it's an armored vehicle. They weigh over 400 pounds. And if it tips over on its side, the occupants can't open that door. It's too heavy. And I hate to tell you this, but it has been labeled a death trap because of these design concerns. That was disturbing for me to read. Now, in addition to that, of course, it's a very large piece of equipment, and it has very expensive components. It has a 3206 cat diesel. You guys know? It has a replacement engine in it. I was able to discern that. And it has a big Allison transmission. Those are very expensive components. And I understand from our agreement that if any of those parts need repair, we have to pay for its upkeep. Now, another concern I had was, in speaking with Mr. Dingerman, was what happens when or if we decide to give it back? Now, the sheriff had it painted and had put some equipment on it. And there is this agreement that the sheriff signed, which if it wasn't approved, it wouldn't be valid. But in this agreement, it talks about prior to the turn-in of the MRAP, instructions will be provided that will specify the demilitarization preparation requirements for each MRAP variant. Well, that's a lot. So I asked, that's a lot of words. So I asked Mr. Dandermont, what does that mean? And he said, well,
back to your original conditions.
Yes. Well,
essentially is what it means.
We wondered about that, yeah. Whether or not we would be expected to repaint it to its camouflage pattern, mm-hmm. and et cetera. But they said no.
No.
He said no. He said, you're not going to worry about the paint job, but any equipment that you add to it, you'll have to take off of it.
Okay.
Now, I also asked him about, in the event that that the county would decide, and I intimated to him that the vehicle had been the source of a lot of conversation since it first came, and there was a possibility that we might not want it. What would happen then? And he said, no problem. He said that you just contact him. And he makes the arrangements with whatever other agency would like to have it, and they make the arrangements to come get it, just as Paul made the arrangements to have it shipped here, as I recall. Did you have it transported?
Yes, I did.
The next owner, if there is one, would make the same arrangements. So it wouldn't cost us anything in that respect. The only thing it would cost us would be to remove whatever equipment we put on it. Now, I did not discuss with him whether or not we would be able to barter or bargain with the next agency, if that was our case, to sell what we put on it to get some money, to get what we spent out of it. I didn't ask him. So I don't know the answer to that, if that was on your mind.
Okay.
Now, So, as it sits right now, well, as it would sit, if Paul's signature is has binding force in effect, then, or if it doesn't, it still is the federal government's vehicle.
Okay.
And I asked him about, well, what, you know, what would happen if it did get destroyed in an accident, or if it caught fire, or whatever happened to it. And he indicated to me that, and Jessica was there, I think, at the time. He indicated to me that the salvage value, or whatever parts off of this vehicle, may be something that would be a benefit to us. I wasn't quite clear to that.
Other law enforcement may want to transfer that and remove
parts. Oh, that's right.
So even if you had a destroyed vehicle, someone still wants to.
Because these things, obviously, you don't come by them every day. It's not like a 350 Chevy transmission, which you can find on every street corner or every garage. If you've got an Allison transmission like this, it's worth a lot of money. And if another one of these agencies blow the transmission out in one of theirs, well, obviously, they're going to want it.
Okay.
So it has a lot of value as the fact that it has some pretty expensive components. I don't know if you want me to continue on, but to me, the use of this...
Yeah, but before we get to use, because, I mean, so for me, my major concerns are understanding that relationship between Story County, the state of Iowa, and the federal government in terms of liability. Because in my mind, maybe a complete misnomer, Sheriff, but in my mind, after we had the conversation, I think I rightly pictured, I think you rightly described and I rightly pictured what kind of equipment we were talking about. I was picturing this big thing, this big armored thing. But I came out of that conversation feeling that this was something that was going to go to the sheriff's office, and really it wasn't going to encumber the county. Financially, it wasn't going to encumber the county in terms of liability. And I think I came out of that conversation believing that we were going to own it, that the federal government was truly giving it to us, and we were going to go from there. And so then I start to look into it, and I still don't understand the liability. I don't have any idea what the liability is, but I know that we're paying several thousand dollars now for insurance on this thing, that we've paid somewhere in the neighborhood of $23,000 in FY14 and $800 so far this year in addition to the insurance. And it looks to me like now we've got an item that with everything we've got going on in the county, we're allocating considerable funds and maybe considerable liability to. And I don't think the board's ever talked about it. And I think it's within our purview to talk about any county property that we have or any liability that we assume. And so those, before we even get to the use of it, those are my concerns.
Well, okay, let me see if I can answer your questions about liability again.
Okay.
All right. So as I understand it, we're not responsible for the vehicle itself.
But you haven't seen that in writing. You've got a verbal on that.
Yes, and I'm going to get it in writing.
Okay.
They said it's a part of these underlying agreements, and I haven't seen them.
Okay.
All right. So, but now we're going to talk about operating it, driving it, just like any other vehicle.
Right.
All right. So if we're negligent, let's say we're operating it and we have a traffic accident and someone is injured or killed as the result of that, they will sue us.
Okay.
For our fault, all right, okay. Our negligence, depending on whatever their damages are. In my opinion, we are responsible and we have to maintain liability insurance for such an event.
That wouldn't be any different than
anything
in a regular county vehicle.
No different than
transport vehicle.
Liability. The comprehensive is different than our liability on a normal county vehicle.
Right, but we're not sure we have to have that. We have it now.
We have it now.
But we're not sure we need it.
Sure.
Which I think is fortunate because if this agreement the sheriff signed is not binding, then I think it's even more important that we have it right at the moment because I'm not sure where we would stand on that in the event that the vehicle is damaged. So whether or not the state of Iowa is also it would be a named party in the, any kind of accident that we have. I'm not clear on that either. I don't think so, but for the sake of the conversation, it's enough to say that we should maintain liability insurance on this if we keep it and operate it.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I'm still. I appreciate that verbally we've heard that we don't need to carry comprehensive. I still would like to see something that says that.
Oh, right? I will. Right. I intend to. Because that surprised me.
Yeah, well, it's the only vehicle that the county owns that we've got comprehensive insurance.
But that's based on thinking that if something happened to it, we had to
replace it.
Well, now, that's where you use the word owns. We don't own
it. We don't own it.
Correct.
We don't own it.
And I'm not sure. I have to talk to ICAP. I want to be sure. That's why this presents so many interesting legal issues. How can we have comprehensive insurance on something that we don't own? What permits us to do such a thing? And I want to be sure ICAP understands that relationship too, because this is where problems result when it's fine when nothing goes wrong.
Sure.
But when something goes wrong, then that gives the various insurance companies and their attorneys the chance to pile in and look very closely and say, well, okay, you didn't have this signed properly or you didn't have this covered properly. And then that becomes a problem. And everything's fine in good weather, but when bad weather hits, that's where you find out exactly where you stand, and that's where you don't, and actually you don't want to find out at that point in time. You want to know now. So these are all very fascinating questions for me because I didn't know anything about this.
Okay. Now, am I correct that it's registered to us as far as the DOT is concerned, but it's titled to the federal government?
I don't know how it's titled.
I know Shelley had to send the title or something through a couple of different times because I remember she brought it in to me to sign after we'd acquired it, and something wasn't quite right. And then I think the last I heard that it's registered to us through the DOT, but it's not titled to us.
So that'd be similar to a lease. It'd be similar to we went and leased a piece of equipment. So I would say our road graders have to be similar to that. We're leasing those road graders now. I mean, I don't know the DOT titles those, but those are not ours, even though we're using them. So something similar along those lines. So for me, and I'm just going to kind of, and if we've got more we need to talk about, we can talk about it. And Sheriff, I would hope that as you explore this a little bit, you can help us with some of these things. I see three possibilities, and I really don't like one of them. So the three possibilities as I see it are we do nothing. We just kind of continue to go as we're going, and that's the way it is. Second possibility is we say, this is a terrible idea for Story County to have this liability for a piece of equipment like this, and we send it back. And the third possibility is we clean up where we are. We figure out whether Story County has contracted for this thing or not, because I'm not clear on that yet. We figure out exactly what the insurance looks like and we're responsible for it. We recognize that there's going to be some kind of ongoing cost, and we figure out how we're going to pay for that ongoing cost and whether it's appropriate, as we deem it, to pay for it using taxpayer funding, or is it more appropriate to do what the sheriff said? I think you said you have paid for some of these things out of the special law enforcement fund. Is it more appropriate to shift it to a fund like that where taxpayers aren't paying for something like this? Those are the conversations that I see we need to have. And Wayne and Paul, the only one that I'm against is the first one, which is nothing.
Well, yeah. The third option appears to be the correct option. And I don't really want to muddle the whole issue. I mean, this is very helpful. It's very informative. The fact of the matter is we have it. How we got it was because the sheriff felt that this was a vehicle that was available, that they were looking at, that they anticipated there could someday be a perceived need. And I think it boils down to, again, a question of law enforcement having the necessary safety equipment to protect not only its personnel, but hopefully under most extreme circumstances, would be able to resolve a very dangerous potential situation. And so from that standpoint, I'm not as concerned about perception. I know perception is always going to be, you know, out there. The problem that I'm concerned more about is the liability aspect of it, such as when it's being used. Example, right now we know the heaviness of it. We know that the terrain in Iowa and so forth, most likely we're not going to have the likelihood of places where it could tip over. But what if we had to go to the university because of a high-profile incident? And the pavement, the sidewalk, the curb, the property there is somewhat damaged. Liability-wise, does that come back to Story County, okay, for that damage because of the weight of the vehicle? Those things are the type of thing that I think we would have to be concerned about. So my take on this is, as unfortunate is that the way it's come about, we're now just looking at the nuances of how we got it, whether it's the best way, but we need to have documented that this is where we are today, and this is how we move forward. This is how we clean up all of this information. And if the sheriff deems that this vehicle is vital to the operations, then I'm going to lean on the side of the sheriff, and then I'm going to try to say, how can we best fund these additional costs that is not borne by the taxpayers, because the taxpayers, by and large, are going to say, this is unnecessary. We know that already. And they're not going to be happy about it. So if we have a funding mechanism that allows this to be available. And then I asked this question, and Sheriff, you probably appreciate Lonnie, what if his last name, Johnson County. He's on the ISAC board. We had talked about this, Emory. And again, he talked about, again, that the law enforcement today is totally different than what it used to be like. And many law enforcement personnel are looking at things like this in hopes that they never have to use it. But the reality of it is there could be an opportunity where something like this will come into play. So one of my questions was, is as a county, why would we not look at some form of a 2080 universal agreement that if something was of such a magnitude that whether it was Story County, Polk County, Marshall County, Jasper County, Hamilton County, any of our counties, that the sheriff could be enter into some type of agreement. The problem is only certain people from the sheriff's department is qualified to drive this vehicle. Not anyone can drive it. So we would have to make sure that its use could be more regionalized, in my opinion. And if we did, is there a way to cost save or share cost for its use if it had to be used in those extreme circumstances? That's another topic for
us. That's a second topic.
That's another topic.
I think you hit the nail on the head with the first part.
But I believe that right now, for me, I lean on the side that I come back to the sheriff and say, it's here, we need to clean up all of the information about this, the ownership and the liability, and then the additional costs as we move forward if this is going to stay in operation, and then where does the funding come from?
Okay.
That's where I'm coming
from. Paul, thoughts?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's here. We've got it. We've had it. We've made some alterations to it. The sheriff's taken the steps that he needs to take to get his personnel trained to operate it properly. I think we go back, as Wayne termed it, clean up the process, make sure that whoever signs the agreement is the correct individual to sign the agreement, so that we're covered for liability. And for me, it becomes another piece of equipment that the sheriff has at his disposal. If he thinks that he needs that particular piece of equipment, then that's his decision to make. But if I'm going to sit here and worry about perception, I go to a fair number of council meetings in these small towns and, you know, well, what the hell does the sheriff need all these SUVs for? And why does the sheriff need all these
SUVs?
Sure, yeah, no. You know what? He's the sheriff. He makes that determination. So I'm in favor of going back and making sure that we've got all of our ducks lined up so we're where we need to be. If the sheriff thinks that this is a piece of equipment he wants to keep in his fleet, then that's where it's going to be.
Okay, and any thoughts on the funding source?
No, not particularly. I mean, if you're going to start to argue about the funding source for a particular piece of equipment, you're going to have to line up a lot of equipment and figure out, well, where does this belong and where does this belong? If it's a piece of his equipment that he uses, then it comes out of whatever fund is appropriate.
Yeah, but there's multiple potentially appropriate funds.
Correct.
I think it's a reasonable part of the conversation, and I agree with you on the perception side of things as it relates to the sheriff. There's a different set of perception on us as Board of Supervisors and our statutory role as determining what kind of funding is being used where. And while you can look at it as the bathtub approach, you know, it's all dollars that
right.
It does matter,
sure.
You know, how those come in. And so I would hope that's part of the conversation that we can have. I heard one thing, Wayne, that you said that was a liability issue that I don't think we've addressed yet, and I would be really interested. Hopefully you can research this some more to understand. Let's say we have an incident somewhere that it is appropriate, the sheriff deems it's appropriate to use this vehicle, and we take off and it's in a little town and we go down one of these main streets in downtown Zeering, and Main Street downtown Zeering is not built to equip, to handle a piece of equipment of this weight, and we end up doing severe damage. Where's the liability there? What can we count on? Are we insured against that, or do we have more? I know I'm asking a question right now that I can't really get an answer to, but I would like to have an answer. Sheriff, I really appreciate that you're going to go back and visit with Don Ellis and take a look in your files, and let's just get this thing cleaned up. We can talk about it when we come back together. Get it cleaned up, and then at that point, let's have the conversation about the funding of the ongoing maintenance and upkeep of this thing, and we move on from there. And this has been really, really helpful to me. It's clarified a lot for me. It's been issues that I've really been scratching my head on, and I wanted to have the conversation when we had everybody here where we could really get through it.
I would like to
just
revisit one aspect of the liability of it. As I understand this vehicle, from all the literature that I've been able to find out about it, it's inherently dangerous. I'm more concerned about who you have operating it. For the rollover effect. Because as I understand it, you can't get out of that thing. The doors are too heavy. And as I remember the literature, now just sitting here thinking about it, the vehicle was equipped with oxygen, private oxygen bottles by the military, because they only had a certain amount of time inside, depending on how many people were inside. I can't remember how many people it could transport, like a dozen. But as I remember, they had them equipped with oxygen bottles, but it would only last a certain amount of time for them to be rescued because they couldn't get out of that thing. So to me, one of the big things that we should be sure about for our employees, if they're being asked to operate such a thing, is that as much can be done with that with respect to that, and I haven't thought about the issue, but as to what can be done, but that is an important question to me.
Okay. If I may.
Yeah, absolutely. Please do.
I appreciate the concerns, and anytime there's an issue that needs to be cleared up, I certainly, as sheriff, want to do the right thing.
No question.
Now, first and foremost, there's no guarantees in life. Anything can be dangerous. Mm-hmm. An example is law enforcement in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
Law enforcement is a dangerous business. Most of the things that we talked about here, I'll respond to when we come back after I have more time to look into this. The practice of the sheriff's office, I think, and I think Paul can also attest to this, what we do, when we have something that needs to be signed, before I sign it, it's ran through the county attorney's office mm-hmm. to see if it's the board or if this is something in-house I can sign as sheriff.
Mm-hmm.
I will be checking on that.
Sure.
Now, as far when we got the equipment, first and foremost, as we do in our office, we believe heavily on education and training.
Mm-hmm.
And we sent this vehicle with four people who have CDLs to Omaha for specialized training in this vehicle with other agencies that have the exact same vehicle. So we went through that training. It's not exactly true, Steve, that there's only the three ways out. There is the turret. That door pops open, and that's an escape out of the vehicle. And the front windshield has red handles. You break down, and you kick out the front glass, so there's exit out of that. There's multiple points of exit out of the MRAPs. Mine-resistant and push-proof vehicle is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Within our staff, I have a detention officer that served in Iraq and drove an MRAP in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have, first of all, training. Several of our people have gone to get the special licensing. And what Wayne was talking about, Wayne, that is true. You have to have a CDL to drive this vehicle unless it is in an operation. So if we have an ERT call, emergency response team call, here or somewhere else in the county or wherever else is requested through mutual aid, just like we use with our dive team,
right.
Anyone then, this is according to the DOT, is authorized to drive that vehicle in an actual event. But when we take it out for training, if we would take it out to show or something to that effect, yes, then we have to have somebody that has a CDL to drive mm-hmm. it.
Sure.
Everybody on the ERT was taken out to the county firing range area, the old county home, and training was given to every employee on the ERT unit as how it operates, how to evacuate it. And this is a training that was received in Omaha. The operation, the evacuation, the top-heavy capabilities, what it can do, what to stay away from, the danger points, all of that. And that is something that goes into the ERT training, PR, periodically throughout the year because we have it out there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We've trained in how to rescue people, how to position the MRAP so you can evacuate people. And whether it's Iowa State or whether it's the main street of Ziering, I certainly would hope that in a life-threatening situation where the MRAP could be pulled up to block hostile fire and rescue somebody who's down in the line of fire, that whether we busted a curb driving up over it or something would be rather minuscule as opposed to what the purpose of this vehicle is.
I think in an operation, just my view, in an operation that thing is necessary and appropriate for, everything else becomes minuscule. Because, right, I mean, if you're going to that vehicle, we got problems. That said, Sheriff, I don't think it diminishes the responsibility of this board as the statutory authority for Story County to look at any and all eventualities and understand what our liability is.
Yeah.
I'm not even talking about whether it's appropriate or not. I'm saying to this point, this board doesn't understand what our liability is. That's what's not. We've got to get corrected.
Well, as I said here, Sheriff, I always do what I can to inform the board. Now, I can't foresee all questions a board may later have on an issue. Now, questions here, it seems kind of, it is a little bit confusing to me because a lot of the discussion that I heard here from our county attorney and talking with the board, the risks are no different than our driving our squad cars and accidents that our deputies have been involved in.
It's a different vehicle, though. Right, so the liability may not be different, but it's a different vehicle with different impacts.
But from my standpoint here, from hearing, I guess I'm just not hearing differences from where our liability is from the county. If my deputies go out here and a deputy would happen to go through a yield sign or a stop sign and T-bone a car, there's issues and the county's going to be liable for something. Now, if there's something where the MRAP is going to a call and goes through a stop sign and hits somebody, the county's going to be – I mean, it's going to be – that is going to be the same problem.
Different impact, though. It's an entirely different impact. When you're talking about a different level of vehicle, it's an entirely different impact. And what's not important to me is the fact that the county has liability. What is important to me is that this board, before the county assumes any liability, this board understands what it is and signs off on that liability. Because while you're really protective of the sheriff's statutory rights, rightly so. I mean, you and I've had this conversation. If it impacts the sheriff, if it impacts your statutory rights, you damn well better be included. I feel exactly the same way about the Board of Supervisors' rights and responsibility, and the simple fact is this is strictly enumerated to the Board of Supervisors, and we have not had an opportunity to formally discuss this or formally understand what our liability is. While it may be the same, we've never talked about it. I learned a lot from this conversation today. I felt it was most appropriate for us to have this conversation here today as part of the budget process. I was viewing it more as a budgetary item when I walked in than a liability item. Now I'm viewing it more as a liability item, Wayne, with, like you said, trying to figure out budgetarily how we handle it. But I think it was completely appropriate. It's unless you advise there, as I see it, this kind of item rests solely with the Board of Supervisors, and we haven't talked about it until today.
And I'd like to just go back to a comment that the sheriff made, and I'd like to maybe approach this a little differently, or from a different aspect about this particular vehicle, this MRAP. Sheriff, why are these vehicles being made available? Do you know?
As I understand, talking from the people of the 1033 program, we left Iraq. We have some were moving out of Afghanistan. That's what they were built and designed for, because the other armored vehicles did not have the undercarriage to resist the mines that the vehicles were driving over. So that was developed for that purpose. They were shipped over there. They were used. We're no longer there in all practical purposes like we were at the one point. So now they brought the vehicles back. Now, this is not – the program that we have here is nothing new to law enforcement. I'm responding here. Let me finish this. And when my 38 years in law enforcement, even the agency I worked for previously, we received – equipment from the military. Waterloo has a armored vehicle that they receive from the military. To buy the civilian version, the minimum is $150,000. It's called a Bearcat. Well, I know I'm not even going to try to bring that to the Board of Supervisors, but this was something we could get for free. Now, we have at Story County received other equipment under the 1033 program that did not receive this kind of scrutiny, but here there's been the public asking questions. And I don't see anything wrong with the public asking questions. Sure. If I seen a huge item out in front of a parking lot that wasn't there before, I'd just out of curiosity be asking what it's for.
Absolutely.
We took this, we were asked, the Cornerstone Church had an event, and they asked us to bring it over. And the response that we got from the people after the services of Cornerstone Church came out were overwhelmingly favorable. We've had it down to the fairgrounds. People asked to have it down there when they had display of other military jeeps and equipment. I mean, I've received negative comments myself,
sure,
but I've received a bunch of positive comments on it. I mean, it's everything we do in politics. We try to do the best we can to operate with what we have. This is something that I thought is a need in the modern American policing. We have threats. We're seeing it all over the world. And now if we have a situation, it's best to have one available to us instead of being involved in a situation thinking, where are we going to go real quick to get one?
Sure.
Because we just can't go down to Camp Dodge and get one, because the military cannot be involved in local issues. So this is just something, it's a piece of safety equipment that we have to protect the citizens and certainly to protect my people. Now, can I say that it's never going to be involved in an accident? It never will roll over? It is a heavy piece of equipment. I can't make those guarantees. And I can't make those guarantees no more than I can one of my deputies driving a squad car down Highway 30. Accidents happen. That's why they're called them accidents. But we do everything we can in this office to minimize the risk of accidents through education and training. And we have done that, and we're continuing to do that.
Absolutely. And Sheriff, I'm going to try to close out this conversation.
Well, I really would like to say just one more thing. I think it's extremely important. excuse me for interrupting.
Mm-hmm.
This particular MRAP never saw Iraq.
So?
Well, the reason that you gave for why they are being made available is not what I understand. The reason that they're being made available is because they were taken out of military service because of the concerns about this vehicle. Now, whether you choose to have an armored vehicle to protect your employees in some situation, I mean, an armored Humvee, which is a very test, time-tested and proven device, as opposed to this vehicle. And I want to go back to what I said before about your employees who are operating this, and we are their employer. And if we knowingly put someone into a vehicle that is not safe, and I'm not talking about a Chevy Impala, and I'm not talking about a Dodge Charger, I'm talking about a military vehicle that I understand has been taken out of military service for the concerns, and the federal government has had, I think, a political problem with these vehicles because it's a giant fiasco for them. All I'm saying, Paul, is if you want an armored vehicle, get a Humvee, because it is a very stable and a very well and tested vehicle. As I understand this vehicle, it has got some serious design flaws. And I'm concerned about our people being put into it, and if they are injured, and we know that, that is a big problem legally for us.
Law enforcement, as I said, is inherently, in and of itself,
that's not what I'm talking about.
Steve, it's my responsibility as sheriff.
It's this county's responsibility if you put
the county
them
has. Hey, this is not where the conversation is going.
Thank you very much. So I'm going to step in here, and I'm going to say, Sheriff, I want to close out this portion of the conversation just like I started it. And that is, when you and I talked in 2013, I said to you then, and I'll say to you now, you're the sheriff. I respect that fact completely. I trust completely your expertise when it comes to law enforcement matters. I agree with what Paul Toot said. If you're the sheriff and you deem that this is a piece of equipment you need, I'm not going to argue it based on need. That said, it's this board's responsibility to understand and assume any liability that the county takes. It's this board's responsibility to figure out how we're utilizing taxpayer dollars and what's an appropriate use for taxpayer dollars, and we've never done that all the way through. So while I sit here and I completely respect your expertise and your authority in this matter, and I'm not interested in getting into that side of it, I ask that you do the same for the board and our statutory responsibility and our responsibilities to the people of Story County when it comes to tax dollars. So as we leave here today, and I would hope that we can close out this conversation when we come back for our callback, let's get everything cleaned up. You do your research. Let's figure out what, if anything, we've missed on in term of appropriateness. I want the board to have a firm understanding. Stephen, I'd like to see something in writing saying that we do not need to carry comprehensive insurance. I'd like to get down to a specific dollar amount that this thing is going to reasonably cost Story County on a yearly basis, and then I want to have the full conversation of where those funds come from and what's the most appropriate place for those funds to come from, and let's make a final decision. With that said, that's the end of the MRAP conversation for today. Is there anything else we need to discuss before we close out? Paul, anything else?
No. Okay.
Well, all I'm just going to say, it's helpful discussion. So if anyone ever asks me questions regarding what we know and where we are, I can turn back to this day and say this was a great educational opportunity to fully understand, you know, the machinery that we have and its intended use, and so forth, and where we go from here. So thank you.
Absolutely. All right. So with that, I'm going to call us adjourned. Thank you very much.